This budget is historic.
The House passes a budget using permanent fund earnings for state services for the first time. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, April 2nd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, an audit of Juneau's Kensington Gold Mine finds mostly compliance, but future challenges.
You know, for the most part, they're doing everything as well as you can do, as well as humans can try to control nature.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips, investing and exploring on the North Slope and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources. And by
Matson, committed to the communities it serves, building on 130 years of reliable lifeline cargo transportation to the Pacific and over 50 years of service to the communities of Alaska. Learn more at Matson.com.
If you love what you hear on your public radio station, consider becoming a member.
The Alaska House passed the state budget today by a bare majority. The 21-19 vote sends the spending plan to the Senate. The action came after minority caucus Republicans criticized the budget for not including more of the spending cuts they proposed. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports on the floor debate.
Homer Representative Paul Seaton spoke in favor of the budget. He's a majority caucus Republican who shaped the bill as the co-chairman of the House Finance Committee. Seaton noted the state would draw from Alaska Permanent Fund earnings to pay for state government.
This budget is historic in that it is the first time we are planning to use the percent of market value calculation for permanent fund earning reserve account for public services in addition to providing the annual permanent fund dividend.
The budget price tag comes in at $5.5 billion, half a billion dollars more than last year. Palmer Minority Caucus Republican Delaina Johnson criticized the budget. As an example of spending she opposed, she cited a $500,000 study of vitamin D deficiency supported by Seaton.
There's still a lot of waste. And again, it comes back to accountability. We are accountable for this budget. And if we're not able to bring something forward that shows that we've really done our due diligence to reduce the budget to the point that is manageable, then, Mr. Speaker, I can't support this budget.
North Pole Republican Representative Tammy Wilson agreed there was still room to cut.
I'm an absolute no. If we can't even take care of the fat that is in this budget before we could even have the real discussions on the other areas, then we truly, really aren't looking for change or transparency.
Most of the increased spending was due to a rise in the permanent fund dividend from $1,100 last year to roughly $1,600. And most of the rest of the increase was for payments for public worker benefits and Medicaid and children's health insurance. Anchorage Democratic Representative Les Guerra says the increases cover the cost of inflation and support public safety.
Those of us who are voting for this budget have said enough is enough. People have a right to be safe in their homes. That's not waste. That's not fat, Mr. Speaker. Those are basic services the public deserves.
Any changes the Senate makes in the budget would likely be worked out in a conference committee. Governor Bill Walker put out a newsletter Monday reiterating the two conditions under which he'd accept a draw on permanent fund earnings. He said the draw must not endanger the long-term health of the fund and be set at a fixed percentage in state law, and that there must be a legal limit on how low the PFD can be. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Governor Bill Walker is asking the state legislature to take $10 million he originally wanted to spend exploring for signs of oil in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge and put it toward other things. Walker sent a letter to the co-chairs of the House and Senate Finance Committees today asking them to redirect more than $8.3 million toward a statewide 911 system. He also wants to split $1.5 million between the Department of Revenue and the Department of Natural Resources to do work on the Alaska LNG project. Congress opened the refuge to development in December, but there is not a lot of data about how much oil is actually in it. In the letter, Walker says the funds are not needed for seismic exploration in the refuge right now. Both the House and Senate will have to approve the budget before the money can be spent. A former White House communications director is now helping promote the Alaska Gas Line project. Mike Dubke, through his company Black Rock Group, has a $15,000 per month contract to advise the state-owned Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation on its communication strategy. Dubke worked at the Trump White House for 3 months in 2017. He previously worked on the election campaigns of both of Alaska's U.S. senators. AGDC Vice President of Communications Rosetta Alcantara says Dubke's firm gives the Gas Line Agency more of a presence in Washington, D.C.
Their resume speaks very well as far as their experience, not only on the national level and kind of knowing the messaging and who to talk to. That's definitely a piece that really resonates. But they also have that Alaska connection.
The contract says Dubke will work on strategies to amplify the benefits of the liquefied natural gas project to the Trump administration, Congress, and federal regulators. Dubke's firm has hired another well-connected political advisor as a subcontractor. Kevin Sweeney's company, called 6-7 Strategies, will also be paid $15,000 a month. Sweeney is a longtime aide to Senator Lisa Murkowski and is married to Tara Sweeney. She is Trump's pick to serve as Assistant Interior Secretary for Indian Affairs. Alcantara says Sweeney will focus more on in-state messaging, while Dubke will work primarily in the federal arena. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, skiers begin a particularly grueling race through the Brooks Range.
It kind of made me challenge my idea of what I was capable of. I feel like that shaped my whole perspective on what we as individuals are all capable of.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein. Attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by
Wells Fargo, with over 13,000 ATMs and more than 6,000 branches coast to coast. For a branch location near you, visit wellsfargo.com.
Would you like to play a part in the public media you enjoy? Consider becoming a member or corporate sponsor. Contact your public radio station to learn how.
Tomorrow is the last day to submit ballots in Anchorage's first ever vote-by-mail election. As Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes reports, amid a packed slate of propositions and candidates, one particularly controversial measure has drawn the lion's share of campaign money.
Voters in Anchorage aren't deciding on a lot. Mayor Ethan Berkowitz is seeking a second term against his main challenger, Rebecca Logan, whose campaign donations totaled less than half of the incumbents. There are also 3 school board seats up for election and 7 bond measures on the ballot. Residents are also asked whether the city should sell off utility Municipal Light and Power to Chugach Electric Association, and the ballot includes proposals to expand property tax exemptions for homeowners, give Whittier Police authority to write parking tickets in Girdwood, and bring a tract of homes in Eagle River under the Anchorage Fire Department's protection. Then there's Proposition 1, the so-called bathroom bill, a contentious proposal that's attracted a flood of campaign money, outpacing all other measures combined.
Nobody asked me first.
Prop 1 started as an initiative led by the conservative group Alaska Family Action and drew more than 6,000 signatures to make it onto the ballot. The measure aims to undo part of the 2015 law that bans discrimination against residents on the basis of gender or sexuality and seeks to regulate public restrooms and changing facilities by a person's biological sex at birth rather than their self-identified gender. In campaign materials, backers say it's about protecting privacy.
At one point, I got up to go into the women's locker room and just was not prepared for what I found.
The campaign in favor of Prop 1 has raised about $128,000, the majority of which is from Alaska Family Action in just the last month, spent primarily on TV ads. However, the proposition's supporters have been outspent by its opponents 6-1.
But we won't be fooled.
That is why women's organizations from Anchorage oppose Proposition 1.
A coalition of groups called Fair Anchorage has raised almost $800,000 to oppose the rule change, arguing that it discriminates against transgender residents, will damage the local economy, and is impractical to enforce. Many of the donations are non-monetary contributions from national groups like the American Civil Liberties Union, Freedom for All Americans, and Planned Parenthood of the Great Northwest and Hawaii for staff time, services, and consultations. Much of the money has gone to media ads, mailers, and voter outreach. April 3rd is the last day to submit ballots. As of Monday, the number of votes cast is on pace to surpass turnout in 2015, the last time there was a mayoral election. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
One of Alaska's three cannabis testing labs has shut down. As Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove reports, the facilities are a critical piece of the commercial industry.
The lab, Steep Hill, Alaska, says it had to close because of complications with a loan connected to the space the business leased. On Monday, Steep Hill CEO Brian Coyle declined a request for a recorded interview. But Coyle says his landlord had received a letter from Wells Fargo threatening to foreclose on the building where the lab leased its space. Coyle says the bank would not renew the landlord's loan because Steep Hill is a cannabis business. The landlord asked Steep Hill to move out, which it did over the weekend. Several other tenants in the building that run businesses unrelated to cannabis were apparently not affected. Wells Fargo's Alaska spokesperson David Kennedy said in a written statement that, quote, "It is currently Wells Fargo's policy not to knowingly bank marijuana businesses based on federal laws under which the sale and use of marijuana is still illegal." Kennedy says the fact that the building has other tenants and that Steep Hill itself was not banking with or borrowing from Wells Fargo does not change the bank's position. Coyle, the lab CEO, says he hopes to reopen elsewhere, but he is unsure when or where that might be. Meantime, the closure leaves only two other labs in Alaska providing state-mandated testing for cannabis growers. The two remaining are CanTest in Anchorage and New Frontier Research near Wasilla. Alaska regulations require growers to have cannabis tested for potency, among other things, before it can be sold in retail shops. State records show there are three other testing facilities currently going through the application and review process. In Anchorage, I'm Casey Grove.
The Coast Guard and Sitka Mountain Rescue are searching for a missing man who activated an emergency distress signal in Peril Strait on Sunday afternoon. According to a press release, the missing person is Sean Paffenbarger. Peril Strait is 30 miles north of Sitka. Watchstanders at Coast Guard Sector Juneau received notice from the Alaska State Troopers when an in-reach device on Paffenbarger's vessel activated while in transit from Sitka to Sauk Point. An Air Station Sitka MH-60 helicopter crew launched. They spotted a grounded 18-foot vessel in Poughkeepsie Point, which matched the description of the vessel in distress. The crew deployed a rescue swimmer to comb the beach while continuing aerial search patterns. Joining the search now is a boat crew from the Alaska State Troopers and a Coast Guard Aids to Navigation team. The Coast Guard cutter John McCormick is also en route to assist. Anyone with additional information about Paffenbarger or his intended voyage should call the Sector Juneau Command Center. Weather on scene saw 5-mile-per-hour winds with 10 miles visibility and clear skies. An environmental audit of the Kensington mine found the operation to be generally in compliance with its conditions of its permit that govern waste disposal and the long-term closure plan. Auditors pointed out some long-term challenges for the gold mine, 45 miles north of Juneau. KTOO's Jacob Resnick reports.
Auditors hired by the mining company Core Alaska visited the gold mine last fall, and their recommendations are outlined in a 60-page report. Alan Nakanishi, an engineer with the Department of Environmental Conservation, overseeing waste disposal at the mine, said the external review is required by a pair of state permits that expire this year.
The audit's a critical element for the agencies for taking a look at kind of a third-party objective look at our permitting program to see if there's areas of improvement.
One issue of concern, noted by the auditors from the firm HDR, is exposed rock that, when mixed with air and water, leaches acids. These are veins of graphitic phyllite that have oxidized after being churned up by machinery. It's like metal left in the rain that rusts, except that in this case, it produces sulfuric acid.
It's not uncommon in the southeast to hit pockets of material that have high sulfide minerals within it and that go acid.
Core Alaska's representatives declined to speak on tape. In a written response to questions, the company said the problem is limited to the treatment facility. It's working to engineer a solution when it raises its tailings dam to increase the holding lake's capacity. The mine's critics say acidic runoff threatens water quality in the long run.
You know, once acid generation starts, it's almost impossible to stop it. And it's very obvious, even through the pictures, that it's getting worse.
Guy Archibald is a staff scientist for the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council. The group's unsuccessful legal challenge to Kensington Mine went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court in 2009.
They do describe that they will remedy this issue when they complete the third phase, the third raising of the dam. Talk about grouting in there to keep the water out. Again, these are short-term fixes.
DEC cited the mine for acid runoff leaching into its unlined tailing treatment facility in 2013. There are quarterly samples being taken there now, and the auditors recommended the state begin monitoring the flow of contaminated water to keep tabs on the trend. They also gave mixed reviews to the effectiveness of concrete applied to seal off the source of the acid runoff. Overall, Nakanishi said his big picture view is that the occasional spike in contaminants isn't alarming.
There have been some issues, some exceedances, but that's not uncommon.
This year, Kensington will need to renew both its state-issued waste management and reclamation permits, which expire in May and September. They're good for 5 years. The public process gives mine watchdogs like Guy Archibald a chance to weigh in.
The bigger picture is I'm always concerned when there's a large dam holding back solid waste directly above Berners Bay.
Reading the audit, he said the mining company has an enormous task and responsibility ahead of it.
You know, for the most part, they're doing everything as well as you can do, as well as humans can try to control nature. I think they spend a lot of time, effort, money, and expertise on attempting to do that. How this is all going to be performed in the long run, you'll wait and see.
Since opening in 2010, Kensington's economic impact to the region has been significant. Core Alaska reports about 380 full-time, year-round employees and boasts it's Juneau's second-largest private employer in terms of payroll. In Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by...
Support for Alaska Public Media comes from Raven Alaska. Raven serves Alaskans in over 115 communities across the state. Seasonal spring routes now available to Kotzebue, Anchorage, Dillingham, and more. Information can be found at flyraven.com.
UA is working to build Alaska's future workforce with investment in UA-educated teachers. Individuals interested in a future in teaching can apply for the President's Teach for Alaska Scholarship for degree studies at any of the UA campuses. An education from the University of Alaska is an investment in the future. Application period closes May 1st. More at alaska.edu/learn-to-teach. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska. Public media loves being part of your day. Thank you for listening and for your support.
Here's the typical route to wellness. Go see your primary care doctor, if you can afford to pay for one, then get a referral to see someone else. Need counseling? You might have to wait in line until there's an opening at another facility. But what if that wasn't the only option? Alaska Public Media's Ann Hillman reports on a different model of care.
In most healthcare systems, people have to see lots of different medical teams to get all of their needs met. But not at South Central Foundation in Anchorage.
And then this is what we would call our integrated care team environment.
Behavioral health clinical director Melissa Merrick walks past typical exam rooms with stethoscopes, medical instruments, and comfortable chairs into a long office with no walls where people face each other directly. Doctors sit next to dietitians, schedulers, and behavioral health consultants, or BHCs. Unlike traditional medical practices, where a person's doctor may not even know if they're seeing a counselor, at South Central Foundation, a wellness team is sharing space and information.
Just by virtue of plopping people next to each other, it facilitates that open communication. So if I'm a BHC and I hear a team on the phone with somebody that I just talked to yesterday, I can kind of insert myself into their conversation and kind of say, hey, I hear you were just talking to Jane. I just wanted to make sure that you knew I talked to her yesterday and X, Y, and Z is happening.
South Central Foundation is a nonprofit that provides healthcare to about 65,000 Alaska Natives and American Indians in South Central Alaska. The people who receive care there don't just visit with a doctor. They also meet with a behavioral health consultant. And if they need other help, like case managers, dietitians, or midwives, they meet with them, too. Donna Galbraith is the senior medical director of quality assurance, and she also sees patients. She says she used to work in a system where integrated care didn't happen, and people didn't want to be associated with behavioral health.
You know, a lot of people say, you know, well, you just think it's in my head, and then they don't want to go, you know, or if they're going over to see the behavioral health, they don't want people to see them go over there. So that doesn't, you know, it doesn't make sense.
Now people see behavioral health as a normal part of overall health. South Central's unique medical system has attracted worldwide attention. Twice it's won the Malcolm Baldrige National Quality Award, a prestigious award that analyzes how efficiently and successfully an organization performs. Since developing the model in 1998, emergency room visits are down. According to their internal surveys, the vast majority of users say they're satisfied. Galbraith says that's because the system was designed by the users, who they call customer owners.
Because it was Alaska Native people taking over the healthcare for Alaska Native people, they did what was culturally appropriate and asked our customer owners, you know, what do you want? And so we had tons and tons of input in the beginning.
But it can be a hard model to replicate financially, since most healthcare systems bill for each individual service. South Central gets about 40% of its funding through a grant from the Indian Health Service. Galbraith says it's also difficult for some medical providers to change their mindset and see how all the different parts of the healthcare system need to work together on the same level.
If I had to sum up the NUCA system of care, South Central Foundation's care, with one word, it would be relationship, because we're really big on that. We do lots of things around that. We have our orientation with everybody together. You know, the physician is sitting there with the admin support who just graduated from high school, and they're oriented together.
Marge Parker is a big fan of the South Central Foundation. She doesn't just see a primary care team. She also attends traditional talking circles with other women and goes to the gym that's on campus. It was during a weight loss and diabetes class that she realized she would benefit from seeing a counselor. So she uses that service too.
I have the most wonderful counselor. She's helping me with legal matters. She's helping me with end-of-life issues.
Parker says through all of the different resources at the nonprofit, she's learned about the importance of exercise and ways to deal with her excessive clutter. She says it's helping her plan ahead.
I'm 81 years old, and I thank God for every day that I have lived on this earth. But now it is time to be thinking of important things I need to think about and do. So when I die, when I leave this earth, my sons won't have to deal with a lot of issues. I feel so good about that.
She's looking after her whole self and the wellness of her family, like the NUCA system is designed to do. In Anchorage, I'm Ann Hillman.
A group of about 40 skiers are somewhere in the Brooks Range right now, competing in an event that is grueling even by Alaska standards. Their task? Traverse the Brooks Range and make it to Wiseman. The annual Alaska Mountain Wilderness Ski Classic kicked off on Sunday. Alaska Public Media's Emily Russell talked to a few competitors before the event and has the story.
Walk around the side of Luke Mell's house in Anchorage and you'll find his graveyard.
This is a lonely ski because its partner broke in Iceland.
It's his gear graveyard. Even some of his friends' gear ends up here.
And then these were Evans, who was one of my classic partners, and I don't really know why they're here. But I don't really want them, so they're in my graveyard.
Luke grew up in the Kuskokwim River village of McGrath and moved to Anchorage for high school. He's a data scientist by day, and on the weekends, he skis a lot.
So the last 4 weekends, I've did like a 20-mile day, 20-mile day. We did a 35-mile overnight, and then a 25-mile day.
All in training for the Alaska Mountain Wilderness Ski Classic. The event has taken place every year for the last 30 years. The course is anywhere from 100 to 200 miles, and it switches between the Brooks Range, the Wrangell-St. Elias Mountains, and the Chugach Mountains. The routes, they're dreamed up by a man named Dave Kramer. Luke talks about him like he's an Alaskan legend.
He drove horses to Alaska, and he trapped, and he had, like, hand-to-hand combat with a wolf.
The romantic vision of what Alaska's about, trapping and hunting and so on. I did those things.
Dave Kramer lives outside of Tok in the same cabin he and his wife built. And yes, he did in fact arrive on horseback in 1970. Dave has been organizing the classic since the late 80s. He interviews every single applicant and has each one sign a waiver. It says, should the worst happen, this prevents the participant and or the participant's next of kin from blaming, suing, or even getting mad at the event organizers, coordinators, and other event volunteers.
Well, it's a release, and what we're trying to say in plain language is, if you choose to do this, you do it of your own free will.
And there are no aid stations along the way, just checkpoints, which sometimes is just a sheet of paper and pen inside a Nalgene hanging from a tree. It's a grueling event, but Dave says interest, it's on the rise, especially among women.
Let's see, I've got a partial roster in front of me here.
Sarah Histand is one of 10 women signed up for this year's Ski Classic.
My tips of my ski poles are a little dull from use, and I'm going to grind them down so they're super pointy as possible.
Sarah is a mental health counselor and personal trainer from Valdez. She skied her first Classic 4 years ago, back when there was just one other woman alongside her heading into the wilderness.
It kind of made me challenge my idea of what I was capable of. I feel like that shaped my whole perspective on what we as individuals are all capable of.
And now it's a challenge Sarah and Luke will go through together. The two are dating and also partnering up for the Ski Classic. It's been 10 years since Luke's first Classic, and he says the end of the event, that's always the best part.
There's the elation of finishing and being done, because what you just did is really hard.
And then people swap stories and compare blisters.
You finish that in this warm, cozy little bubble with baked lasagna and people sharing this experience, that ends up being like pretty powerful.
Luke and Sarah expect to spend 5 nights together in the wilderness before finishing in Wiseman. In Anchorage, I'm Emily Russell.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org/news. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman, Rasha McChesney, and Jacob Resnick in Juneau, Zachariah Hughes, Emily Russell, Casey Grove, and Ann Hillman in Anchorage, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., and Emily Kwong in Sitka. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. ACPE's Education Loan Refinance can save you money and give you just one bill for all your private, state, and federal loans. The Alaska Refinance Loan offers Alaska residents a 4.95% interest rate with no fees. You choose between a 5, 10, or 15-year plan. Go to acpe.alaska.gov/radio or call 1-800-441-2962. This message sponsored by Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. Opioids are powerful prescription pain relievers and must be used properly to avoid danger. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medication protects children and pets from accidental poisoning and protects the environment. Information about safe opioid storage and proper disposal is at opioids.alaska.gov. This message is sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. Support for public radio comes from the communities we serve. Whether you give as an individual member or through your business, know that your contribution makes possible programming that informs, inspires, and entertains. We thank you for the role you play in your public radio station. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.